day draws to an end and we watch you collect your belongings. We hide our emotions by painting smiles upon our faces. That's what we do best. Everything is fine. It's just an ordinary dismissal.
Hello, I'm Rosalind Hopkins, head teacher at Birchwood Special School in Melton Mowbray. And this week in our podcast, Special School Lockdown, I'm joined by Kerry, who is one of our parent governors and mum to Evan. Hi, Kerry.
Hello.
Kerry, thanks for coming along today to talk to us about your experiences of lockdown as a parent. Mm-hmm. Would you like to just start off by telling us all a little bit about the wonderful Evan?
Evan is 10 years old as of last week. He has Angelman syndrome, which is a genetic condition which causes profound learning disabilities, limited mobility, no language, verbal language, and epilepsy, curvatures of the spine, and several health issues that come along with it.
Kerry, do you mind me asking about what that the journey's been like in sort of discovering and getting that diagnosis for Evan?
From being a baby, he came out an absolute little perfect dot, and we didn't realise that there was any issues until he was probably about 6-8 weeks old. The only thing Evan ever did early was smile and be a very happy baby. He didn't cry particularly. He didn't have those normal milestones that I think as maybe a second time parent that you might pick up on really quickly. For us, we kind of noticed that he didn't ever try and grasp anything. He didn't rock or roll. And within that first sort of 6 months, we started to really think that he may be blind. Started to do the regular trips to the doctors, were told to calm down and to wait. And somewhere around his 1 year check, our health professional kind of said, we think your concerns may be relevant. And that's when it all started to move towards the process of diagnosis for Evan to be told that he had Angelman syndrome, and that our journey perhaps wasn't going to be quite as linear as many parents are.
Wow. Was it good to feel listened to, or was it still a shock?
For me, no. I would say that in all that time, I'd been working towards just getting that. You become very focused as a special needs parent. It's this goal and then the next goal, if that makes sense. And I guess that was our first one. So getting his diagnosis was so important to me because I wanted to know what I was fighting. It's that kind of thing about invisible dragons. You until you can see them, you don't know what you're dealing with. So for my husband, Wayne, it was a huge shock because very early on, we'd seen a lovely Ed Syke, and I'd asked her lots of questions. Wayne had asked her one question: do children catch up? Do some children just catch up? And eventually, after backing her into a corner, she said, yes, occasionally children just catch up. And that was what was in his head for the rest of the time we were on this journey. Hope. Yeah, that hope. And I don't think he'd even considered the fact that this wasn't going to be how it was going to be for us. That was what he clung to. So when we got the diagnosis, he was devastated. So we had two very different reactions. And I feel like from that day on, we were almost armed with ways to move forward, because we had our little tribe of people, Angelman's parents, that helped us, supported us. We weren't expecting him to suddenly get up and walk anymore. We kind of just took it at his pace. And I think for the first time in 18 months or 16 months, whenever we got a diagnosis, we actually started to enjoy him.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't going to die tomorrow, and we weren't going to be massively overwhelmed with any big changes, and we just kind of puddled with it. And from then on, it just became so much easier because we started to appreciate the child in front of us and not the child that we thought we were getting.
So as things started to move forward for you with Evan as he got older, did you start to think about whether he would go to a nursery school or what school would look like? When did that idea that he wouldn't be at home with you every day, all day, forever, start to sort of cross your mind?
We had an amazing name was Jenny, lady that came to the house and did cause and effect play and stuff at home. And she was wonderful. She really opened my eyes to other things that I could be doing with him, because as a parent, you see yourself reflected in society in all different ways. As a special needs parent, those role models often aren't there. So we had this lovely home teacher come to the house from about two, I think, and we had an amazing, and she was wonderful, speech and language therapist called Susan Churcher, who came and equipped me with all these ideas of how I could help him. And I think when you've got that toolbox, when you're given that toolbox of skills to be able to help your child. So we were making treasure boxes and we were making post boxes and we were doing all those things to sort of start the bridge of communication. So they kind of started to talk to me about possible nurseries and possible ways forward. And we got him into the parks, which was wonderful at the time. We were very, very lucky to have an amazing experience there for Evan. And they were really aware. They'd had an Angelman's child very recently before, so they were kind of ready for him. They knew what they were doing, and that felt really positive, because up until that point, we didn't really know any other Angelman's children locally. So to have people that were so skilled and understood his needs as well as they did was a really lovely experience for us as parents. And from then, we looked at the three special schools in Leicestershire.
Yes.
we visited two, because the third was actually too far for him to travel. And we got a really, really nice feel from the teaching staff here. Certainly in that first class that he went into, when we came and we walked in there, I was like, this feels okay. This feels like a journey that I feel he would enjoy. The teachers there at the time were wonderful, and he had a really lovely transition experience here.
I think it's such a huge event in any parent's life when their child starts school for the first time. But for a parent of a child that has special educational needs, they've already been through such a process, haven't they? Such a learning curve about their child and about their child's needs. And I guess a time and a period of acceptance of the fact that they are on a different journey to perhaps the one they expected to be on, as you describe. So his first day of school, you know, must have been quite scary. A special moment. Scary, really scary and special moment. Yeah.
We had what I would call nothing new for us with Evan, because he's amazing at it, but a bit of a trial by fire coming here. And within that first year, Anne and Natalie, who were the teachers then and were amazing, took him away to Centre Parks for three nights. And it all just felt like we were running to keep up with him, because we'd given ourselves, when he came to school, we'd sat down and we talked a lot about managing our fear and never standing in his way of any opportunity, even if it was frightening for us. So I'll never forget Anne phoning me. They'd had a child drop out of a residential that Evan was too young to go on, and said, do you mind if we take him away? And I can remember taking the phone call going, I mind, I really mind. And Wayne standing behind me holding up our agreement going, he goes because it's good for him and we need to be brave. So yes, this school has been an amazing experience for Evan. He loves it here.
I just find that really inspiring, what you just told me, because I think for every single parent, no matter what your child's needs are, that's such a good thing to live by, isn't it? This idea that you don't want to stand in the way of any of their opportunities or any of their experiences, even if they're scary for you as a parent.
Absolutely.
That's the real bravery that all parenting requires, but it's just so easy as a parent to say, I feel uncomfortable with this situation, so I can't let it happen. For you to do that forever, and that's incredible. And as a result, he is a very happy and confident little boy, I think. So that's probably, obviously a good rule to live by.
Yeah.
Really good rule to live by. I like that one.
You kind of feel a little bit like, because he can't tell us, he doesn't have that spoken language. So we are constantly relying on other adults to fill in the gaps, really. When he's not with us, we're trusting our most precious possession to somebody that actually probably knows him now fairly much as well as we do, but still it's a precious gift to give to somebody, and
definitely.
Having them away for a night. The worst part of it was Evan is an inveterate not sleeper. It's part of his condition, but also he's a very sensory child. So we went away. He went away to Centre Parks for the first time and we felt terrible. We were like, how can we do this to this staff? They work so hard and they're not going to sleep for 3 nights. And the little monster slept every single So me walking in the next week looking like I'd been hit from a bus, I really don't think they believed us after that he didn't sleep.
But I think that's the other thing about children. Once they start school, the people that get to know them in school, the staff and their friends, they often get to know another version of your child, don't they?
Absolutely. And that's so important because as human beings, we all need that opportunity to shed our skin and to be, you know, to have that. You wouldn't expect your friends to see you in the same way as your parents and that kind of thing. And I think especially these parents, sometimes we're kind of trying to hold on to this sweet little image of our child, well, certainly us, not all special needs parents. But actually, Evan's quite the adventurer and he wants to do things his way. He's very independent. He's very self-assured. And school allows him to do that and gives us the confidence to allow him to do that. And I think recognising that your child, regardless of any limitation that society might put on them, still needs to be able to shed that skin and to be that person in that situation that they truly are. And it's lovely to have a place that understands that and helps us to understand that.
No, absolutely. Just reflecting on something you said earlier, when you made reference to the different professionals, whether it be health visitors or speech and language therapists or those staff at the nursery early on, it makes me reflect on how important our roles are in shaping the experiences parents have. Uh-huh. And how if you have, as a parent, a really good experience, whether it be a one-to-one or kind of with an institution, it can really have such a positive impact on you. But equally, if you have a negative experience, that could make things take a turn for the worst in terms of how parents feel about doing things. I think that's just a really important thing for all professionals to remember. Every one of those interactions is so important to those parents because we are that singular place or those singular people to that family. So it's just really interesting you saying how those professionals stood out to you and brilliantly had such a positive impact on your experience as you were on that journey with Evan.
I think it's really important to remember. I think we grow away from ourselves so quickly. As a child, I can remember that teacher that inspired me and changed the way that I thought about my schooling. And I think most of us as children have that experience, that one person that kind of lights it up for you and helps you make those connections. And I think particularly as a special needs parent, you almost go back to that state where you're looking for that light that helps you connect better, to understand better, to deal better with what you're doing and what's in front of you. And I think it's so important for professionals to get that right, because sometimes the impact of a negative professional or a negative impact, and often it's not their fault per se, it's just a number of factors that build up for that negative experience, but it stops you dead. And if you're exhausted and if you're constantly having to fight for things for your child, that experience can stop you dead from pursuing that. Because it's so debilitating when you've got so many balls in the air all the time, it's really hard to climb back up from that knockback.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, and I think really useful for us all to be reminded of that, and also inspired by that idea that we can be the light, we can be that decisive element.
Absolutely.
So that's brilliant. So moving things on a little, Kerry, school has been an overwhelmingly positive experience for Evan.
Absolutely.
So coronavirus comes along and whips out from underneath us all the one place or the one thing that, or many things that we have built around ourselves, the structures that we've put in place to survive and to thrive, were deconstructed in many ways because of this coronavirus.
Yeah. I think it's really, really important to think for a child like Evan, who enjoys routine. He really enjoys routine. And school isn't just a positive experience. This is a child in a wheelchair that will bunny hop his wheelchair down the drive to get to the bus. So school is one of Evan's joys, I think, is perhaps the way to look at it. And I understand that, because at home we don't have a 20-foot trampoline and a sensory room and a swimming pool and staff that are always exciting and understand his sensory needs and move heaven and earth to make that happen for him. Also, staff that don't care quite so much if he smears jelly all over the wall. Whereas at home, me not so much. So, you know, coming to school is a fairy tale for Evan. I've always said that. He absolutely loves it. And when that's taken away, and very suddenly taken away, a child that would expect it maybe to be a holiday, and for the first couple of weeks is really accepting of that, and then realises that that's not what it is. And, it was a really negative experience for us. Those first couple of weeks where we did lovely things together as a family were great. And then it kind of all went downhill from there for us, really.
So people that maybe don't understand would say, okay, but your child has some complex needs. He has an education, health and care plan. Mm-hmm. He could have been attending school throughout the pandemic, throughout the school closure.
Officially he could, in terms of the advice that the government had said, but actually it's not that simple, because for every child with a health and education care plan that needed to be in school, Evan, that then you need two members of staff at least. You need a driver to take him. You need, so it's not the points of contact with adults that Evan would need for him to regularly come into school is much, much more when you really sit down and think about it. And actually, to begin with, we were fine. I mean, before lockdown happened, I was almost disgruntled that Evan couldn't come to school, because we don't have the equipment that you have or the space that you have to meet his medical needs on a day-to-day basis. And that sounds, that's such a big statement, but actually Evan has a curvature of the spine, which will eventually need to be operated on. And the longer we can keep him mobile and upright, the easier that will be, if that makes sense. So at home, we would struggle to give him the amount of exercise room, standing time, walking time that he needs for that to be helpful to his spine. And we don't have the equipment. So I resisted lockdown right up until a lot of people, took their children out of school in those last 2 weeks. But I was determined he was going to come in, because I needed him to have that health movement issue as long as possible before lockdown happens. And I think when it happened, it did feel like a holiday for the first couple of weeks. We were all riding the quest of the change. My husband was essential, so he went to work as normal. And me and the children sort of settled into a bit of a routine. And for the first couple of weeks, my younger son is seven and in a mainstream school at year two. So we were very much focused on, in the morning, we got all his schoolwork done as much as possible with me supporting him. And in the afternoon, we concentrated on Evan, and we made things and we cooked together and we did all those things that you do in the holidays, except leave the house. And as time went on, obviously in the holidays, I am fortunate to have a direct payments worker that comes in 2 days a week. And on those 2 days a week, I don't lift Evan at all. In these 2 weeks, I was on my own completely with them, lifting him all the time. And by the end of the second week, my back had gone. I could barely stand up. And we started to struggle, in the sense that it really did feel more difficult. And as time went on, trying to educate Logan to the standard that he needed and to give Evan those experiences, school were amazing. We had phone calls, we had packs sent to us, there was online learning that was available. But actually, my biggest problem with Evan was his eyesight makes it very difficult to work with tablets and phones and small things, and we needed something bigger for him. And we struggled on through for quite some time. I think we really started to see the cracks in April for Evan, because he became very anxious. Evan, as I've mentioned, isn't a sleeper, but as time wore on, and it was obviously very different, and he wasn't coping with the change, he just gave up on sleep altogether. He just stopped doing it. And that sounds like a joke, but it's not. He literally couldn't be out of a room with you. So if you left a room, he would bite his hands until they bled, or he would smash his face off the wall, or he would find a way to replace his anxiety with pain, which was incredibly hard to watch. And we hadn't really picked up on exactly what was happening until it started happening more than, you know, a couple of times. The constant hand chewing and making himself bleed, and the face smashing, the screaming if you left the room. Evan is the sweetest, has the sweetest temperament. He is a very, very happy boy on a day-to-day basis. He's not always the most careful with you. He's a strapping, tall 10-year-old, and he will grab anything to be upright or to get your face closer to his for a sloppy kiss. But he became quite aggressive, hitting, flailing arms at your face, pulling hair, biting.
He was telling us something, yeah, wasn't he, Kerry?
Yeah, his world changed. It wasn't right. It didn't feel right. And he became increasingly distressed, and his distress was shown in negative behaviours. And it was something we'd never had to deal with before. And it was so overwhelming. And we were in this situation where we were trying to be as normal as possible for my other little boy. Mm. My husband was basically told, you can take 3 months unpaid leave or you can be at work. You are essential. That's how it, and we just couldn't afford for that to happen.
No.
So we just sort of put our heads down and carried on. And it was hard. And if it hadn't have been for those little lights at the end of the tunnel, I'm very lucky. One of the things that we do as special needs parents is we do check up on each other. And having those minutes of kind of reaching out for each other and being able to go, ooh, not coping, is so important, because it's not something you necessarily do to other people ever. And having his class teacher, Hannah, constantly trying to find ways to make that easier. She created a YouTube channel so he could have videos of his staff members and see them, because the television is huge and that's not such a challenge for his eyesight. So he was having story time with his favourite staff, and he was seeing people do the singing, and that really helped for a while. That was really positive. When he was at his worst, I could put that on and we could get that feeling of a bit more normality. And having kind of phone us as regularly as she did, she was amazing, and we were really, really grateful for that. And right to the point where she phoned me, she said, it doesn't sound good. I think maybe we need to look at Evan coming back in for a day a week. Because I think when you're as tired as we were, you don't see it. You don't see how much you shrink in that time to try and cope with what's going on around you. And I think it was almost, if you look at the time of how it's been, you stop phoning people, you stop communicating with others, you just kind of shrink in and try and...
You go to ground.
Yeah, literally. And I think that's where we were when Hannah kind of phoned and went, do you think maybe a day a week might help? just to refocus Evan, because he was struggling so much, and we felt like, even though compared to a lot of other people, we are incredibly lucky to have a garden and to have, you know, toys and things that the children can use all the time. Even, you know, he can be in the water, which is so, so helpful. It wasn't enough. He wasn't having enough routine to keep him from hurting himself, from us not being able to leave the room. And 24 hours with your child when you have it sleep next to them, when you're having to be there all day and all night, I can't tell you how exhausting it is and how mentally draining it is.
You can't be your best when you're that exhausted, and when you're on all the time, everybody has to have some time to replenish their energy levels and be the parent they want to be. And when you're tired all the time, it's really hard to be what your child needs you to be.
Yeah, I think one of the worst things for me was we had a morning. It was the morning after the night before of Evan having a really poor night. And I was sat at the table with Logan. It was an active mass session. So we were making things and stuff. And I just very, very clearly remember him putting his hand on my head and went, "Mummy, you're asleep." And I'd literally fallen asleep in what I was doing with him. And I just felt so guilty that I hadn't got the time or I hadn't even been able to stay awake during what we were doing. Not that he cared, he was having a whale of a time. But it's still that feeling like you're failing all the time, feeling like you're letting one down to try and deal with the other one. And while I'm sat there doing mass with him, I'm not stimulating Evan, and he's sat in front of the television. And yeah, it's really difficult. I think as a parent, it frayed. You could feel it fraying. And coming back into school was an absolute lifesaver, not just for me, but for Evan as well.
And we got the privilege of seeing his lovely smiling face that morning. So yes. that was all good. Did things improve a bit with, because he didn't come in very much, did he? He only was coming in for one day. Did that help?
Came in one day to begin with. I think for the 3 weeks before what would have been half term, he came in for 3 days, and he was just a different child. It was like having the sunshine back. I drove him into school on the first day, and Hannah and Claire in their full PPE, and I was a little bit worried in case he A, found it frightening, or B, attempted to steal it, which is Evan's other favourite trick, glasses, name tags. But he just squealed with delight when we pulled up at school. Saw Hannah, had his arms out, and I think it was just so lovely to see him happy, because he hadn't been that way for quite some time. And it was a really nice moment. And they took him away. When I came to pick him up, he was absolutely filthy, which has always been my measure of a good day at school. The dirtier he is, the happier he is. And he clearly given them the runaround, because they both looked like they'd been in a washing machine in all this PPE and that heat. Trampolining with him or whatever they'd been doing, they were soaked. And you just... The feeling of relief of seeing him bounce, and he literally bounced out of school into the car, squealing with delight the whole time. And that night he slept, and that was the first time in over a month that we'd had a night's sleep. So it was, it was amazing. And actually, for the next two nights he slept, and we'd lost that needing to be. He still woke in the night, and we still went down to him after that, but we didn't have to. We weren't having to sit in his room the entire time. We could settle him and walk away. And I think that was something we'd been missing for you know, well over a month, sleep.
and just that first night, and then the second night when you get when you've managed to have some level of decent amount of sleep, that is like, it's a real tonic for you, isn't it?
Yeah, and also for my younger son, we decided the first day that Evan came to school, we weren't going to do schoolwork that day, and we just baked and played, and we went on a treasure hunt around the garden, and we just did silly things that we hadn't done because I just hadn't had time to play with him.
He's seven, isn't he?
I had to wear the Spider-Man mask, and we played superheroes and all that kind of thing. But we just hadn't had a chance to do it. So for both my children, it was a really positive experience.
The parents of the children at Birchwood are just so incredible, because there were lots of conversations happening where parents were saying, yes, they are really missing school, but we'll hold on for another week, or just like you did, they hung on for as long as they could before so many parents said, actually, I think the balance of benefit of avoiding the virus versus the other things they need is tipping other direction. And that is a very difficult decision to make as a parent.
It's huge. And there's the whole thing about your child. And because Evan would be classed as medically vulnerable to a certain extent, there's that decision, which is horrible. But there's also that responsibility to your wider community. Evan, although, you know, there's all the fear around him catching something, it's how would I live with myself if I sent him to school? And because of that, a member of staff was ill, you know, and you're constantly having to weigh up those checks and balances. How bad does it have to get before we make this decision? And I think I think we'd got to the point of no return.
Definitely.
But it wasn't a decision that we made easily, having to put members of staff in that position is quite a hard thing to choose to do, as well as your child and members of staff that might not be able to see families because they're seeing my son, if that makes sense. That was a really big decision to make. So yes, none of this has been easy for anybody.
No.
Those kind of choices are quite hard.
I think we've been lucky as a community in Melton and as a community at Birchwood, in so much as I've really felt that the whole community has worked really hard for each other and has tried to put each other before their own needs all the time. So we've got staff saying, I want to do my bit. I want to come in. I want to provide something for our students. I've had parents say, we'll hang on for as long as we can, because we know that the more young people you have in, the more adults that means are going to be out and about and moving around. I do get that genuine sense that everybody has played their part in trying to keep the infection rate as low as possible for as long as possible and get things under control in the hope that we can return to some normality. I think the tricky part at some point, probably around mid-June, early July, was this sort of realisation that we're a long way off from normal and we're going to have to continue to try and find a way forward in this new world order with these special safety precautions and special measures in place to keep people safe when they are in school, and try and find this middle ground between risk taking, because absolutely that there is some element of risk, but also between returning to some structure and returning to some normality for our young people and for the children particularly. So a difficult place for everybody to arrive at. And I'm hopeful that as a community, if we keep talking to each other and keep listening to what everyone's trying to achieve and listening to the challenges that we're all facing, then hopefully we'll continue to work in that way. Mm-hmm. I think there will be more challenges to come, no doubt. Yes. But the way that everyone came together, really at a crisis point, I guess, is something to be really, really proud of. I'm really grateful that you've been able to describe your situation so well, Kerry, because I'm sure it will resonate with lots of our families and lots of families that might be listening to this podcast from other locations. I am in awe of what you do. I'm in awe of all of our parents and how they continue to be just incredible for their children. It is so inspiring. I think it's a bit like you're not a parent, you have to be a super parent, don't you, when you have a child with special needs. You do find ways to somehow dig deep and go the extra mile, and it isn't always easy. It's quite often really hard.
We always joke about it, we call it extreme parenting.
Yeah exactly.
Yes. Very, very, very briefly, I would like to say that when Evan did come into school, the range of activities and things that his staff class put together for him, and the stuff that they had him doing, Evan stood for the first time independently during lockdown. And that generally, because of the things that staff have done in school, genuinely so proud of them. And I think it's really important for that to be recognised, just the imagination that's gone on to try and educate two children instead of a class of children has been really inspiring for us as parents as well.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for the energy and effort that staff put in. The teachers and the staff that came into Birchwood wanted to add value, and they wanted to ensure that when it came to home time, that young person had an amazing experience and that they had looked at adding value and trying to play a part in progressing them a little, because they know how much it means to the parents and to the families. So, but thank you for saying that. All of that support, all of that encouragement just keeps everyone going. And I really hope we can continue to find the right way forward and add value and make school that incredibly happy place
that it always has been.
Yeah.
Classrooms became quieter, more empty seats appearing each passing morning.
So in our next podcast, we'll be hearing from Hannah, who is Evan's class teacher, about her experiences of teaching during lockdown. We hope you'll join us. Thank you. Bye.
Still your teacher. I am still proud of you. I am still here.